Hey, what's going on, wrestling fans? It's the Psycho Shooter Drake Younger, the 2023 King of the Death Matches, former WWE referee, and I'm so excited to be here this week for another episode of Live and in Color with my man, Wolfie D.
Hey, this is Jimmy Street, host of the Live and in Color with Wolfie D podcast. Hear the life and times of professional wrestler Wolfie D, from his time in the territories with PG-13 to his time in WWE, ECW, WCW, TNA, and more. Nothing is off limits and nothing will be held back. Thanks again for tuning in. Here he is, Wolfie D.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Once again, Live in Color, Wolfie D. You know, is it almost pointless for me to say that anymore? I mean, should I keep opening it that way, Jimmy?
Of course. Yeah, should people. I mean, it's an intro, man. You know.
I just talk. No, Jimmy. I just talk.
You just let it go. That's how it works. Yeah.
What's going on today, man?
Not much, brother. Just, you know, running around like a chicken with its head cut off and feet and everything else. But, you know, finding time to record a little introduction here of this interview we're about to have. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited about it, too. And also kind of like, man, you know, because the guy's he's probably on the shelf for good. You know what I mean?
For sure.
He's a good dude. Drake's definitely a good dude, man. You know, and it's crazy because I sit here and I think what all's going on with me. You know, I told you my hernia that I had when I was a little kid, like 5 or 6 years old, has busted.
And, God.
On that here pretty soon. And then the tear in the knee, or excuse me, the tear in the hip that I got, and the leg numbness, and that they can't figure out, and the back issue, you know, all this shit, knees. And this guy, man, one move, and I mean, we're going to find out what that move was. One move just did it. Bam, he's done.
Yeah, it's horrible, man, because, you know, I know I went through that surgery. Now, not the same thing, not the broken deal, but I've been through that major back surgery. I know you're probably going to have that, too, but I can't imagine it happening, like your career being on the line. It's a different story when it just kind of is natural and it happens to you in real life, but it's also tied to your career, and then it ends your career. It's very scary, man. I want real quick to kind of speak on something about Drake, though. You know, I run the Twitter for us. You know, you come on there randomly, but I'm the guy that mostly posts about our shows and stuff, and man, he's not very popular on Twitter, so... Here's the thing. We don't judge people for their aside from like Adolf Hitler is welcome on this show, because here's the thing. Everybody has their different perspectives on life, you know? And if we can't find a middle ground with people, which is, I think, this show's overall perspective is finding a middle ground with just about everybody in every walk of life.
Yeah.
You know, have we loved everyone that's been on the show? No. Have we clicked with everyone that's been on the show? Not necessarily, but we're open to their perspective. Yeah. Disagree or not, you know.
Yeah.
You gotta listen to one another. And I feel like if we didn't live in this bubble of I'm right and you're wrong.
There's
no black and white in this life anymore.
And nobody can agree to disagree. There has to be a winner.
There has to be a winner. And that's something that I'm seeing. Yeah, more and more with these younger people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, scary, man. I mean, I know I went through my everything I think and say is right phase, but, you know, when... Life will humble you quick on that, I promise. So,
absolutely.
So I will say this. If you come in with any preconceived notions about Drake or anything that he said in the past or anything that he believes in, I think you should just listen to the conversation and see if you feel the same way at the end of the conversation.
That's a good way to put it, Jimmy. That's a really good way to put it, man. That's cool. And I'm going to bounce back real quick before we go to break, man. You know, Dave puts on at the beginning of this, do not try this at home.
So
I think we need to do that for Drake. Don't try this at home. All the stuff he's going to talk about that he does. I mean,
definitely.
And I wanted to say to the people that are on here listening because they love hardcore wrestling and they love Drake, man, if you're an indie guy or whatever, just remember, man, one move. I'm seeing so much stuff in the big leagues and the super indies, as they're calling it now.
Yeah.
So much risk being taken for a pop.
Right.
You don't got to do it like that. There's still psychology, and there's a way to get over. And immediately people are going to go, well, Wolfie, what about Mick Foley? What do we? Yeah. There's one Rey Mysterio. There's one Mick Foley. There's one Undertaker. You know what I'm saying? Those.
Right.
There's just once in a lifetime people.
Yeah.
So that's my disclaimer. Do not try this at home, Jimmy. We'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey folks, to get your official Live and in Color with Wolfie D merchandise, go to prowrestlingtees.com/livewolfied. Check it out.
If you're listening to Live and in Color with Wolfie D on Apple Podcast and like what you're hearing, go ahead and leave a 5-star rating. And while you're at it, write a review. Tell us what you liked. Tell us what you'd like to hear in the future. It's very important to us and always appreciated. Thanks again.
All right, we are back. And as promised, we have a very cool guest today, a very outspoken guest and a very crazy guest that does stuff that I would not even think about doing, even when I was younger. You know, Jimmy, he's a madman, but... I think, are we ready to get him on here right now? Because I think he's out there somewhere. Hang on a second. Breaker 19. This is Wolf Dog looking for Death King. You out there, Death King?
I am here, man. Hey, Wolfie, how are you, sir?
Hey, Death King. Yeah, what's your 20? What's your 20 right now?
my 20 is Central Florida, and it's about 90 degrees right now.
Man. I just came rolling through there about 4 hours ago, headed north.
Okay, good deal.
Wolfie's working on a new trucker gimmick, by the way.
So. Yeah.
I dig it. Yeah.
Guys. Thank you for coming on, Drake. We really appreciate it, man. I contacted you well before the Facebook thing and your back deal. I saw you just a few weeks ago in Philadelphia. You come up and said hi to me and everything, and we didn't talk long. But I was like, wow, I hadn't seen him in forever, man.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm excited to be on the show, and you know, a lot of the fans of. I guess my particular genre of this business may not mm-hmm. know that, you know, I grew up in Southern Indiana and frequently went to the Evansville USWA shows. And I was fortunate enough to have USWA syndication. So, I mean, a lot of what, you know, I know we're going to talk about me, but a lot of what you and Jamie did back in the day was a big influence on me as well.
That's awesome.
Man, I appreciate that. And hey, we can talk about me if you want. I mean, whatever.
let's put Wolfie over.
It's his favorite subject.
Yes.
No, man. I want you to, the fans may not know too, that you just had a pretty bad accident where you broke your back winning the deathmatch tournament. And you did it in, you worked through two matches and didn't know it, right?
I actually did four matches that night. It wow. happened early on in the first match. Yeah, it was a rough night at the office. Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'd be happy to catch the listeners up kind of on what's going on. You know, I guess for several years, you know, the doctor told me that I had been walking around with two already chronic fractured vertebrae. And so, you know, I as well as I do, I think the majority of the fans know that, you know, when we as professional wrestlers, when we sign up for this life, you know, we know that at any moment it could end, you know, when we right. step in those ropes. And we understand full well the damage that we're going to do on our bodies over the course of the years. So be that as it may, I had two fractured vertebrae And then, you know, I left WWE about a year and a half ago. And then in the past 6 months, I have made a little bit of a comeback as far as being an in-ring competitor, and more specifically in the deathmatch side of things, and got myself back in good shape, lost 25 pounds. And, you know, to be quite honest, Wolfie, you know, I mean, it has been a really great run as far as indie work is concerned. I mean, other than it was definitely the most, you know, the highest profile bookings I had, the most, you know, the most independent money I'd ever made. And, and it was really good schedule too. And, you know, XPW, the promoter, Rob Black, I mean, he's kind of changed the game as far as, you know, non-televised companies. I mean, he gives the guys royalties off of streams and t-shirts and stuff like that. So, you know, we built a pretty good business model. But back to the injury, you know, in the deathmatch tournament, I say that because I'd built up to get to that point. First match, I took a spear into the corner and light tubes, and then a piece of glass went in my back, which, you know, for a deathmatch guy, it's not too terribly out of the ordinary. It might sound funny to a civilian, but, but you know, standard procedure. Glass in the back is standard procedure on a Saturday in Southern California.
Right.
So, you know, but that spear, and the guy I worked with did it perfectly, nice and flat. He did nothing wrong, but it was just enough to break a third vertebrae. And through sheer adrenaline and everything, I mean, I got through three more death matches after that. When I landed back home in Florida, I mean, I couldn't move, and I went to the hospital.
Man,
yeah, dude. I've done some, you know, I've taken some bumps out of balconies and the, you know, stuff like that, and been hit with stuff. Sure. And but man, the death match.
You've done some barbed wire too. You've done some barbed wire.
Yep. Yes, I did a barbed wire, not a ball bat, but just a barbed wire mat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And was very nice to that barbed wire. But
yes, sir.
Man, I just don't. And there's a genre for it, and I think it's gotten out of control, because I know there are guys that do this stuff, and I feel like they're a lot safer, and they know how to. And I think you're one of these people that like can make the bumps mean something instead of you. I watch, you know, I feel like everybody just wants to do shit to go viral now. You know, you've seen the guy
spit the
fire, and he was probably not trained spitting fire, and it goes all in his face and his throat and all that shit. And then, hell, Janela setting his foot on fire and having to get that put out. The other kid that threw the kid across the arena and landed on the floor after the referee lit him on fire. I mean,
a lot of the cats nowadays, they're kind of taking it to a whole new level. And, you know, I kind of joked with you a little bit when we were texting. I was like, man, whatever happened to good old fashioned barbed wire boards and, you know, and light tube bundles, you know, because when I broke in, and I was fortunate enough too, Wolfie, because I came up in, you know, in Southern Indiana and in that kind of realm, growing up on the Memphis stuff and everything, it gave me an appreciation when I first came in to train, even though I was young and dumb, but it gave me an appreciation for blood and how special it is. Cause when you guys would bleed in Memphis, it was a big deal. And I remember, you know, distinctly, it was toward the tail end of USWA when it was on the down, but it might have been 97. And I saw just, you know, as a 12, 13-year-old kid, I saw Billy Joe Travis bleeding, and the blood was in his blonde hair, and he was selling the blood. And, like, you know, I feel like some guys today, they bleed, and they just want to fire up and be tough guys. But, I mean, just that stuff, that really stuck with me, and I really wanted, once I did the death matches, I wanted to kind of make sure that, you know, I was incorporating technical wrestling and making sure this, you know, selling it and everything like that, and trying to be different, you know, than just kind of punching each other and cutting each other and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. You got to, I mean, any big bump I took, you know, was going to, and that's, you know what I mean? They're going to kick out of half this shit, which should be, each move should almost be a fit, in my opinion. I mean, a light bulb across the head, period. Just one of them, a swing.
That would have been
in the 90s, man. That would have been a finish.
Yeah.
Not that I would have ever let anybody hit me with one of those. Because isn't there, now you said that glass goes in your back. Isn't there some kind of poison inside that shit that ain't supposed, ain't good for you?
Yeah, there is. I mean, the gas that comes out, I mean, light tubes have been around for a while now. It's definitely not good, but I mean, neither is, you know, cocaine and blade job. So I mean, we roughly
exactly right. But let me ask you this: the people sitting at ringside, right? They're not going to get my cocaine or my blade.
Sure, they're
going to get some. They're going to get glass charge. How many times? Because I swear to God, I've never been on a show with the light tube stuff that I can recall. But so does that happen a lot where the glass shoots out to the crowd? Has to, right?
It does. So the fans, though, they kind of come prepped. Like they wear the goggles and the mask and everything. So it's kind of a cool atmosphere. And I got to tell you, where I really learned to set myself apart as deathmatch is concerned is, you know, the tours I did in Japan with Big Japan Pro Wrestling. Because it's a big deal there. They're really looked at as like samurai fighters, and it's respected and it's serious. They're on the cover of the sports magazines, and that's a lifestyle for those guys. And you know, he did a lot for me. I know his name kind of brings up negativity, but Ian Rotten was really good to me when I first broke in, as far as giving me opportunities and everything like that. And that allowed me to get to Japan, where I really got to learn. And like those guys, like I said, it's a way of life, man. Like they're not like some of the old school deathmatch guys here in the States. I mean, we were in the gym every day. We're in the dojo training. We're in the tanning bed. You know what I mean? And like if you're saying you're a deathmatch guy, you're still going to play the part of being a professional wrestler. You know what I mean? That's what really stuck with me as far as going to Japan.
So let me ask you this, and I consider you to be, okay, what, help me here, Jimmy, Damien, what do they call him now?
John Wayne Murdoch.
Okay, I know for a fact that kid can fucking work. Without doing the deathmatch shit, he can work, okay? And Pondo knows this. Pondo made it big in the deathmatch stuff, but Pondo could not work a lick. I broke in with Pondo, and he was terrible. He was terrible. But then he went to the deathmatch stuff and would do any and everything and made a big name for himself. What percentage of the deathmatch guys, like, can actually work if they had to?
You know what? Nowadays, I'd say it's a good solid 85-90%.
Wow,
maybe that's awesome. And I'm telling you, that's from the heart. In the early 2000s, maybe not as much, because it was kind of it was newer then, and it was another way for guys that couldn't necessarily, you know, work very well. They could still get over and in that way. But I think nowadays, like, you know, a lot of the schools are, when you're training, you know, you kind of, it's like the Japanese style where you have to be a regular wrestler for a few years and build up like that. And there's an influx of lucha guys that aren't only, they're not only cruiserweights, but they're doing deathmatch cruiserweight stuff. So it's, you know, it's a whole nother thing where guys are doing 450s with 450s with light tubes and Spanish flies on the barbed wire boards. And their shit looks great. And they're crisp and they're in shape and they got good gear. So I do think the bar as far as athleticism and being great work, you know, being able to handle yourselves, that's definitely been raised. I think why you see so many guys and girls go for the death matches, and it's kind of why I started it back in the day, is, it's a way for you to really stand out. There's a small percentage of people in the world that are willing to do it. And then it opens doors for you to, you know, again, you know, I could work, and I wrestled for several years where I didn't use any weapons. And, you know, by God's grace, I got to WWE and had a great run there as a referee and everything. But I don't think I wouldn't travel the world before WWE if it wasn't for death matches.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Yeah. That makes sense. And I'm going to tag in Jimmy.
I'm coming in for the hot tag. Thank you for taking the heat.
Hot tag. No. Oh,
I'm taking the hot tag. I'm just giving it to you for a minute. I'll take
Okay. I'll
and remember, hey, I'm a referee, and I know Wolfie always used the referee in all his tag matches. That tags over the top rope and holding the tag rope. Wolfie D's a professional. He's a professional.
I was a manager, so Wolfie just gave me the Iggy. You're supposed to not pay attention now. Okay, got it. All right. So Drake, you know, I feel like we're putting you on, you know, like we're prosecuting attorneys right now, and you're the defense attorney for death matches.
Yeah.
But okay, I gotta ask this because Wolfie got one of my questions, and I'm happy that he asked that. You know, the level of work, I do feel like, you know, the level of work is going up, but we know there's some guys in the business that do the death match that probably will never be able to properly work a full match. Now, you're kind of known as that hybrid guy, like we've talked about John Wayne Murdoch, like, you know, those guys that can actually do the half and half. But I got to say this, we know that the crowd, you know, and God knows Twitter and everything like that, you know, they're so emotionally mature over on Twitter. You know what I'm saying? So where do you think the ultimate level of death match is? Because is it death? Because I mean, I feel like it, the bloodlust that a lot of the crowd fans get, and maybe I'm misunderstanding because I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily a fan of it as a whole. I respect it for sure. I'm a little more of an old school guy, but at the same time, do you feel like the ultimate end of these is that someone will literally die? That's just a naive question.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, a lot of the cats, I you know, it might've been who they broke in with or whatever, but I think a lot of the cats kind of let the vocal minority of the audience kind of dictate how they structure their business, how they do, how they wrestle and everything like that. And, you know, I was, you know, when I broke in, I was taught by the same guys that Wolfie worked with, you know, that, you know, we work with each other and we work them, you know, the fans don't dictate what we do and everything. So I think there's also, you know, nowadays there's so much social interaction and instant gratification, you know, since I came back to the Indies, like I did a match a few months ago and I went to the back and the guy I was working with was showing me highlights of what we had just done. I was like, in 2003 when I broke in, we had to wait like a month for the DVD to come out. You know what I mean? So there's all that change of landscape, you know, and everybody, like Wolfie mentioned earlier, they want to go viral or have that highlight reel. My thing, you know, in the 6 months that I've been back around on the Indies and any time that I spend, you know, going forward, you know, I just want to, you know, preach and teach the guys that, you know, you tell your story. Don't let the fans dictate it. If it's good, it's good. And the emotions from the audience is what is going to make it a good story that you're telling in the ring. You know, we can do, you know, in the matches that I've done recently, I mean, if you count the bumps compared to other matches on the card, you know, there wasn't as many bumps, but we, you know, I really want to bring emotion out. And I learned that in WWE, you know, being working there 7 years with the best in the business, about the camera shots and just, you know, your facials and the storytelling and kicking out big and making, you know, the, you know, everything like that, that just the minute details and the meat and potatoes that makes a great entree of a pro wrestling match. And I think if guys focus more on that, on just making the little things count and you know, executing it, just putting on good shit, you know, your punches, your Irish whips, the stuff in between, just making sure it's good shit. I think that'll just, you know, if they focus on that, that'll kind of put that other noise to the side. But I agree, man, you know, that was a long-winded answer, but I think it's gone a little too far, and hopefully, you know, the talent can reel it back a little bit on their own. And I will say, look, you know, the majority of the guys nowadays are incredible workers, but there are some people like they don't belong in the fucking ring. I mean, they're nice guys, but my neighbor's a nice guy. Doesn't mean he belongs in the wrestling business.
And folks, that is your king. So all the new deathmatch listeners that came to the show because Drake's on, this is your king telling you this. And again, go back to episode 13. We had Madman Pondo, and thank you for visiting.
You know, some of the guys that I do want to highlight that are just incredible. Wolfie, I know you worked with the Game Changer crew when you were producing the the Ric Flair retirement show. Yeah. But Nick Gage is just incredible. I mean, nobody has like so much charisma, so much fire. He doesn't have to do much, and man, like it's a really cool. He's got his character down and his charisma and his aura. You know, Masada is incredible. Obviously, Necro Butcher. He's doing the MAGA gimmick now, better than ever. You know, there's so many guys,
Man, that you know, it's funny. We talked to Pondo back in the day, and you know, you're kind of saying some of the same things there about, you know, Nick Gage is this guy that's literally, you know, taking it mainstream. And I remember watching this at parties back in the day. We would watch CZW stuff and we would just, and it wasn't something we all sat down and watched, but at the same time, we would walk by and the TV had CZW on and then we're talking to other people in the parties and then we would look and then, you know, this kinds of things. So it was kind of like a CZW continuous loop, but it was interesting enough to keep everybody watching and stuff. So do you feel like Nick Gage, and I mean, Pondo kind of agreed with this, but do you feel like Nick has taken it to the mainstream now?
Oh, yeah. And it happened while I was in WWE. And Wolfie, you know, like when you work there, like you're in that bubble, so it's hard to pay attention to anything else. So, you know, I wasn't really keeping tabs with the indies, but I've caught up since I got out. When Nick Gage got out of jail for robbing the bank, and when he came back, he reignited deathmatch wrestling because in 2014 or so, it was on a real big decline in America. I'd even stopped doing them. Like I stopped doing them entirely. And when he came back, he just reignited it. And then in turn, kind of the perfect storm aligned where that the Vice Channel did a documentary on deathmatch wrestling. And that brought in a crap ton of new fans that are more of that. They came from like that Hot Topic kind of goth kind of, you know, outsider music era, you know, and they took that energy and like they fell in love with death matches. So there's this whole new fan base now.
Yeah. Yeah,
man.
So I think that's what really brought it in.
That's cool.
I got a question for both of you. What is it with professional wrestlers and robbing banks? That is three people that I know. I'm sure there's more. There's three that I know that were wrestlers and robbed banks, man.
Working the gimmick.
But hey, you brought up the producing. You know, I produced some of those guys, and in the battle royal, they were in that. And, man, when it was time for when me and Bubba were like, okay, you know, this is Wolfie's hometown. We're getting this hubcap in here somewhere. And you know, we came up with a deal. And I swear, every one of them guys that works for, I forget, what's the name of the promotion?
GCW.
I'm sorry.
GCW. Game
Changer. Every single one of them, like in school, like raised their hand and shook it like me. Like they wanted to take the hubcap so bad. And they were so like, I was surprised that they were like that, you know, respectful to me or whatever. So,
well, tell it. It was like they were fighting. PG-13's a thing, right? People love PG-13. I mean, GCW, if PG-13 were still a tag team or were in their prime, would they not be basically owning GCW right now?
Yeah, and at that show, Matthew Justice is who I think you hit with the hubcap. He took it like a G.
Oh, I hit about three or four of them, and then
Matt Justice. He took that hubcap and he took perfect, you know, flat back off of it. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Janela comes from behind. He throws it out of the ring. I look at him like, "Are you stupid?" And charge him, and that was my elimination. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
I got my
very
in,
cool,
though.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, and that's great that you get to be around those guys and you know, drop some knowledge on them and everything. And it's funny. The other week, I was in a hotel room with a younger wrestler, and then Schlack. I'm not sure you're familiar with him, but he's a really great character. He's a stack, like a, you know, incredible shape. He's got traps like Goldberg. But he's a madman, and he does death matches. And so, like, he's like tattooed all over his and everything. But he grew up in New Jersey, so he never watched Memphis stuff. And dude, I was like, "Hey, man, have you seen this? You know, some of the—" I was showing him some of the PG-13 stuff. He only knew you as Nation of Domination. He didn't know you guys were wrestlers. you know? Yeah, and so like, I got to show him all that, you know, the stuff with rock and roll. And then, you know, the fight you got in with Ox Harley and IWA. And he's like, man, these dudes were fucking nuts.
Hey, that Ox Harley thing, that was the closest I've ever been to a death match. So.
Yes. Yep. Oh yeah, you were gonna kill that man. You were gonna kill that man. That was a death. Yeah.
So true.
Let's take a quick time out and get a word from one of my dope ass sponsors, and we'll be right back with more Live and in Color with Wolfie D.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey folks, this is Wolfie D here, and if you are looking to buy or sell a home in Tennessee or Southern Kentucky, you're going to want to call my buddy, the rock star realtor, Benji Bowie. And you say, Wolfie, how do I get in touch with this rock star? Well, you can call him directly at 615-390-8216. You can go to his website, BowieHomes.com. That's B-U-I-E Homes.com. Or you can email him at BenBowie34@gmail.com. When you need a home, you need the Rockstar Realtor.
Benji is a member of Exit Realty's Garden Gate team in Gallatin, Tennessee. Support for Live and in Color with Wolfie D is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the Ultimate Men's Hygiene Bundle, the Performance Package. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code WOLFIE at manscaped.com. If my math's correct, that's about 8 million balls.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
How did it go? So you go down to NXT. Did you go and try it out? Did you go down to try out as a wrestler? And then what happened to where you were wrestling?
Yeah.
Was just like, hey, let me do something.
Sure. So it was really cool the way it worked out. You know, I'd gotten in really good shape, and the Performance Center had just opened. This was in, you know, 2013. So it was they had moved from the old, you know, the old warehouse in Tampa to now it's like super Walmart and, or, you know, it's like the pro wrestling training center. And so I came in and I tried out as a wrestler. William Regal had scouted me. And then the tryout, it went phenomenal. It was 3 days of, you know, just brutal boot camp like training and psychological tests and promos and everything. Went great. And this was during a time, this was right before they started bringing in like the super indie dudes, like Prince Devitt and Kevin Steen and all the, you know, all those guys. Yeah. So Regal had pulled me aside at the end of the tryout. And this was so cool, man. It was one of the coolest, you know, I'll never forget this. I was getting ready to, my wife was pregnant with our second child and everything like that. And I'd, you know, been going hard for a while. And he said, hey, look, you know, you've got all these Japan. He's like, you know, you're cut up and everything. He's like, you're in great, you know, you're in good shape. He's like, look, honestly, you might get a 3-year run here as a talent. And he's like, you know, would you be interested in being a referee and we can teach you more stuff and you can help the newer guys in the ring, keep them calm and because you got experience. And you look like you can break up a, and you look like you can break up a fight, which is what a referee should be able to do. And so he offered me that, and he's like, look, you'll be out of the limelight, but you could have a 20-year run. And he's like, it's not as much money, but it's steady money. And I was like, absolutely, I'll take it. Like, of course. Like, it was a no-brainer. Like, no, yeah. You want me to be the janitor? Whatever. Yeah, whatever you need. Yeah.
Don't have to take a bump. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And what was cool for me, and you know, just it's amazing what, you know, this business, like, when you look at it, it can be such a grind and so tough on you personally. But it's like, man, when good things happen from the hard work that you put in, it's like, this business can be a really beautiful thing. And it's like, at that moment, I was like, man, I had checked all the boxes that I wanted to, as far as indie wrestling was concerned, you know, had all the good runs and went to did all the tours and stuff. So I was like, there's nothing else that I like want to do. I'm totally okay just being a referee. And I fell in love with it. Oh my God. I fell in love with it. It was amazing. I freaking love refereeing. And you know what? It made me appreciate it so much more too. And especially, you know, you've done more episodes of live TV than I'll ever remember, Wolfie, but like getting those time cues in and getting the time cues in at a calm manner. And, you know, when there's an audible call on your headset, you got to relay that to the guys, and you don't want to get in the way of the camera. You don't want the hot mics to hear you giving cues. So it's a lot, big pressure, and I thrived off of it. And, you know, a few years into my run, I was, you know, Triple H requested me to ref his match with him and Stephanie versus Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle at WrestleMania in New Orleans.
That was
dope. And dude, I mean, I'll never forget it, dude. I'm standing there in the middle of the ring. There's 80,000 freaking people around. I know the camera's not on me. Dude, I'm a kid I cut my head for $5 in the Evansville Coliseum. And I'm sitting here, $5 in a hamburger and a joint. Sorry. And here I am in the freaking Superdome about to ref Triple H's freaking match. I was like, this is amazing.
Is that your,
I was like, this is freaking pro wrestling.
Is that your biggest
match? Yeah, that was the biggest match I ref.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean to cut you off, but I do that because I forget and I don't write shit down. So if I don't say it, I get it.
No. And what was cool is, you know, we rehearsed it weeks and weeks, and Hunter, you know, Rhonda was comfortable with me, you know, in there. Hunter was comfortable with me helping Rhonda. It was great, man. It was a blessing for sure.
You said something through all that at the beginning there of, and it's, and believe it or not, I'm going to tell you this. You said something that I've never heard before in the wrestling business. If you, what you said about the referee, you said the referee needs to look like he can break up a fight. I swear to God, I've never heard that. And now all the stuff, you know, it's always you don't want a big Frank Morrell referee. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
You want a little referee. Yeah. And I think maybe people have taken that. And I'm really talking to the listeners out there that might be, you know, indie wrestlers or indie referees for sure. Take that in consideration. Go out there. You see some of these referees, they look like you said, your next door neighbor, he might be a nice guy, but he don't need a referee. You know, it looks like the mechanic up here at the shop, you know, or whatever. But that makes so much sense, man. You do want the referee to be a smaller dude to make your guys look
better. And even if he is smaller, just like
he can break it up.
Yeah, even if he is smaller, what I love is, you know, even if you are smaller, a smaller ref, like when the guys are in the corner, you know, get in there, you know, you're trying to get him out of the corner. You're trying to get him in, you know what I mean? Don't be afraid to get in there a little bit. And I you worked with him a bunch during your run in WWF, but Mike Chioda is the best. He's the best ever.
Oh, awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. He's great.
Yeah. Any indie referees or any young referees, I invite you, when your next study session, watch The Rock versus Hogan from WrestleMania 18, but watch Chioda the whole time. Okay. He was amazing in that match. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, my God. He was so good in that match. Yep.
It's almost like you could start to see wrestling from a third angle now, you know, if you start to pay attention to that. You know, that's cool. I dig that.
Oh, yeah. And there were some times where, you know, people got knocked silly. They didn't kick out on live TV. You know, luckily I made the right call. And then, like, Vince gave me a bonus for it. Because he wants the refs to treat it. He wants the refs to, you know, think work, but, you know, ref it like shoot. It's a shoot. If the guy don't kick out, that's on him.
That's a Sinbodyism right there. Think, work, but shoot.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this then. Okay, and I'm not asking you to, we're not like a, hey, let's go viral kind of show here. We're not. But I would love to hear your opinion on the Aubrey Edwards referee. Is she doing like a Tommy Young impersonation, or do you feel like she's trying to do her own thing with the super animated overly? Sure. I mean, I feel like it's kind of a distraction in a sense, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Right, yeah, and Aubrey, she actually came through. She did a tryout at NXT for a week with us. She got an incredible work ethic, man. That girl loves the business. What I think is she's kind of different because AEW, like, and it goes against everything that I know you were brought up in and everything I was taught, but, like, they're giving her T-shirts and they're giving her, you know what I mean? She's almost like a character.
Personality.
But it almost works for that company. If it was anywhere else, that's just the kind of best way that I can describe it. At times her and I love Bryce. I love Bryce Remsburg as well. I mean, sometimes he can oversell and overanimate, but you know.
Super talented. And I'm not knocking them. I just can't see that. God forbid something happens and AEW doesn't make it. Tony runs out of billions, whatever. But let's just say, I don't know that they're building the best resume for eventually working for Vince. I feel like they're doing their gimmick there, and that's fine. I'm not knocking that, but it feels like the WWE referees are basically almost perfect. And I know that is not true. I know that. But you guys are held to such a high standard, I feel like, that if
you know,
like Dan Engler, Rudy Charles, I know him. I know
Rudy Charles. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. You know, great referee. We could tell on the indies that guy was going to be doing something big because he was doing it in TNA.
Right.
You know? So,
even if you look at his stuff on the indies, I mean, once he got to WWE, he learned, you know, he'd even done some of the kind of character stuff back in the day, but he learned the WWE style.
Right,
you know, to be an official. So and you're right. We're held to a high standard. I mean, there was meetings every week about, hey guys, your 10 counts or freaking 20 counts out there. Vince is pissed. You know, like, he's like, you know, hey, they'll get mad at you right then. But you know, are they going to pay your mortgage if you get fired for making a bad call? We're like, yeah, you're right.
So what are you hearing in your ear as a referee? Can I ask that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, in modern day WWE, you'll have the producer of the match, and then you'll have the timekeeper, which is generally Billy Kidman, and then whatever producer has the match. Every now and again, you might hear Hunter chime in, but not really. They talk to the producer. Producer talks to the ref. Ref relays to the talent. If anything goes bad, it's on the producer.
Okay. Hey,
That's why those producer chairs, man, they're very tense, man. They're very tense.
Sure. I'm sure. Yeah.
Listen, they threw me into that thing, man. Like, I obviously was in the battle role, but I also helped Bubba produce it along with Sin. But then I had that four-way match that was just mine, the one with Grisham and the other guys, right? So I'm like, you know, asking Road Dogg, okay, so what does this mean? What do I do as far, you know, when the match is going on? He said, you go sit over there, put them headphones on.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then what?
Yep.
He said, talk to Scotty. He'll help you. Scotty Armstrong.
Yeah.
So they told me to you know, get with these guys and blah, blah, blah. And that's a whole nother story of how these guys not listening, because I gave them some really good suggestions on this stuff, but they did not listen. but anyway, and then Road Dogg and them laughed later. You know, they were like, I told you, they don't listen. Just do what to do. And so I had to find out what spots I needed to go wide on and all that. And these guys really weren't giving me, man. So I sit over there, and like I said, I swear to God, it was right as the match was going on. There was no prep for this. It was the first time I put the headset on. And I said, Scotty, what do I do? Okay, this button here does this. All right. And you got to get on, press this button and tell them what to do. So, man, that shit, you know, as a wrestler, I honestly, I've said this before, I felt so comfortable. I don't think I ever was nervous going to the ring, ever. I don't care on what it was. Sure. I just wasn't. I felt comfortable. I was nervous as shit sitting in that seat, man. And then they did something, yeah. And I was going, go wide, go wide, go wide. And they did this tremendous, right. You know, crazy spot. And then all the, like, Road Dogg and all the other people standing back are, oh, great call, Wolfie, great call, Wolfie. I was like, shit, I'm good, I'm doing good.
Yeah, yeah. And Wolfie, did you almost feel like a different kind of adrenaline, too? Like, that, you know, you have that adrenaline as a performer, as a talent. Yeah. But then there's, like, I noticed, like, Matt Bloom and you know, Terry Taylor, they when they're in the producer chair, it's a different kind of, you know, they get excited, too. They get that fire and energy for the talent that's in the ring, you know, telling the story that everybody helped put together.
Yeah, even though, like I said, they really didn't listen to me, I was still cheering for them. You know, obviously I wanted the match to have my name on it to go well, and it did. So, yeah, it makes awesome. You look at it from different angles. People don't understand all the stuff that goes into a pro wrestling match, especially televised, you know?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people involved.
Yeah, for sure. So I got a question. This one's kind of taking it in a different direction, but that's just how we do things. So you've wrestled some great names, man. I mean, like Low Key, Chris Hero, you know, John Moxley, Willie Mack, Kyle O'Reilly, Davey Richards, Sammy Callahan, Claudio Castagnoli, Adam Cole, Roderick Strong. So many between CZW, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, so many great names. What would you say out of that era would you say was the guy you clicked with the most in the ring? And it maybe wasn't even on that list.
Sure. Yeah. You know, as far as, you know, regular or technical, you know, traditional wrestling is concerned, nobody touches Adam Cole on that list.
Okay.
Adam Cole working in the ring with him. It's freaking magic. Like, oh my God, he's so dang good and so easy. He's one of those guys you could wrestle, you know, every night of the week and twice on Sunday. And he's tough too. Like, he's not afraid to do, you know, bumps in the chairs and garbage cans and stuff when it makes sense. And you know, I remember we had a match in Los Angeles and he had really bad, he was sick, like really sick, like sleeping the whole night in the locker room. And we put the match together and he's like, please wake me up the match before. And then he got up and got ready and we went out there and, you know, did 25 minutes and just had one of my favorite matches ever. I think that's a testament of the why he is where he is today. Obviously, Daniel Bryan, he was incredible to work with as well. But I had my best chemistry with Adam Cole. When it comes to death matches, Danny Havoc was probably my best opponent.
We had
quite a few, and we did. You know, it's cool because he's my buddy too. You know, it's really different when you go out there. You know, you beat the crap out of your buddy more than, you know, just your casual acquaintance. You know, we really went all in and it was cool. We got to, you know, obviously we came in way after the territories, but we got to like go to different, what we called territories together. Like him and I did CZW together. And then we went to Big Japan. We did Germany. We did Mexico. So we got to kind of be a little bit of a journeyman in a modern day.
Yeah. Deal.
And we got to be, you know, do it with friends and seeing the world on another man's dime. It was just, you know, we living the dream, man. It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. I wanted to kind of get into a bit of a touchy subject in the world that is now spilled over into wrestling, but the Rick Steiner episode with the trans girl over there. And then, you know, these just in regular sports, college and high school and all that, where they're allowing trans men to compete with women. As far as professional wrestling goes, what do you think about that?
First off, in the world of sports, like, you know, here in Florida, in Tennessee as well, there's legislation being passed to protect that because these, you know, biological males, you know, that maybe got the 242nd place in a women's swim or in their own male swim meet, you know, they're now, you know, they can identify as a female
and they could be the tippy top athlete. And it's also happening in mixed martial arts, where there's biological males that are allowed to compete in something where your main goal is to knock the other person out. It's just incredible, you know, and it's funny, man. Like, you know, I don't want to get into left or right or anything like that, but you know, all these women rights activists, they're not speaking up for the women athletes in legit sports there, you know? So I think there's steps around the country that are being taken to protect that and everything.
So as a shoot sport, you're like, hell no. And I believe that too. So go ahead with professional wrestling. Yes, it is different because we're working. So
sure. Yeah. Look, there's different types of genres and markets for pro wrestling that have a fan base, whether it's big, medium, or small. And you know, I kind of had to open up my, you know, get outside of my, you know, Mid-South box that I grew up in and just realize, hey, there's a market for like no ring fighting. There's no ring, and it's just, there's a market for that. There's a market what do they call it? The custom stuff where guys pay to see women and girls. You know, there's a market for that. And there's market for LGBTQ and trans performers. And from, if they're in the locker room, man, like when we shake each other's hand, they're part of the crew. So, I don't have an opinion one way or the other about it. I know there's a market for it and people, you know, it's sell to that degree. I'm sure there's some people that think that I've killed the business by, you know, taking light tube bumps. I'm sure there were guys back in the day that were like, why is Wolfie D and Jamie Dundee wearing tennis shoes in the ring? I mean, like,
bro, you know, it's no constant, idea. Yeah. Buddy Wayne hated us. Buddy Wayne could not stand us, man.
Right. So, you know, again, I got to kind of evolve, you know, in my old fart ways to what's going on now. So, and what I think is cool about wrestling, and some people forget, is like, dude, when we enter the locker room, like we got a common bond and love and like all that other stuff. We can like legit, like keep it at the door. And, you know, I've had matches. I've had like some of the best, you know, matches and personal experiences and encounters with guys that believe nothing that I believe, you know, guys that are atheists or Mormons, whatever, gay, whatever. And we, you know, it doesn't matter when we're in the ring, cause we're taking care of each other and we're putting on a good, and we're doing the best we can to put on a good show. And I think that's kind of, you know, the beauty through all this. I don't have enough knowledge about the Steiner situation to make a comment on it, but other than that, that's just kind of my overview.
I mean, God forbid you don't have enough knowledge to not comment. God forbid anyone else do that in the world.
Right. I know what Scotty told me a couple of weeks ago, but that's between me and Scotty. So anyway, we'll go off to a different question, Jimmy.
So, yeah, we're going in a different direction. And I appreciate your opinion on that for sure. I think it's very enlightened, no matter what anyone else thinks. I appreciate it. So this was a question that came to me that I just died to ask. Now, again, when I've asked Wolfie this, it's kind of like a weird question to answer because, well, you don't want to act like you're going to put heat on somebody or in a sense, like, you know, cut somebody down. But who in the whole time that you were there at NXT and WWE system, who is someone that you thought was going to be Roman Reigns, or maybe not Roman Reigns level, but really doing well, and they didn't?
Yeah. You know what? One of the early tag teams that I worked with there, the Ascension, back in when NXT first came off in 2014, when I first came there, the you know, we called it the coconut loop, the Florida Armory shows we do, you know, all throughout there and all throughout, you know, the TVs, they were building those guys as monsters. I mean, they were having enhancement matches again. They were squashing locals. And then, like, you know, they had a great tag run, believable, you know, guys were in great shape. And then they got signed and they finally got the main roster contract and it just fizzled out from there. I think that the big thing, and it's not just them, it was a few guys, is you know, when Hunter was driving the car creatively for these characters, you know, the presentation was a little different. And then when they get up there, you know, with Vince, and then all of a sudden, instead of, because at NXT, we had maybe six or eight riders. You go to the main roster on any Monday or Friday, you got at least 25, 30 riders up in that piece, dude. Like, it's a madhouse, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like, and I mean, this is kind of an offshoot of that answer you just gave me, because I thought they were a cool gimmick. I mean, they're what I consider the sons of the Road Warriors, or maybe the grandsons of the Road Warriors, because you had like Demolition and Powers of Pain and Blade Runners pop up after the Road Warriors. But do you feel like that statement they made in the ring, whether they kind of said something about the Road Warriors, and it seemed like the crowd just did not like that at all, and it kind it was like a go away heat statement rather than a getting heat statement. And I feel like that just died. And I almost seem like, and again, you make him tell this, but Vince, if you're getting a gradual build, he's cool to deal with you. But sometimes if something goes over like a fart in church, he's done. Is that true, or?
And I think for that particular, you know, that Road Warriors line, again, that was, you know, a writer who's a, you know, a former law student at UCLA or something like that gave them that line. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
And so these guys, you know, they're new, so they're executing their marching orders. And I think that's just an instance where sometimes, you know, you show up to work and you just do what the piece of paper says, and whether you like it or not. But then there's some times where if you feel that conviction, and I know that I worked with Hunter way more than Vince, but I know the times I was with Vince, like, if guys had, you know, I don't want to say if they had balls, but if they, you know, if they had conviction, they actually said, you know, hey boss, I think, you know, what if we do it here? Not just, you know, no barge in his office and say, hey, this is the shits, make me the champ, you know, but like, you know, but like, hey boss, what if we, you know what I mean? The guys that did do that, Vince listened to them. Yeah. So, you know, just a lesson as well.
Yeah. It's funny because we did that. Jimmy knows this one. Is a first time in WWE, our first tryout against two job guys, and we get to win. And then we wrestle Smoking Guns for the belts, double segment match, competitive, you know, but we lose, whatever. Well, when they filmed our little promos, they gave us these sheets of paper, and then they had the teleprompter. Neither one of us had ever seen a fucking teleprompter in our fucking lives. And they had this thing written down on what they wanted us to say, and it was nothing that PG-13 would fucking say. And we tried to do it the first time, and then me and Jamie just looked at each other, and then we, hey, can y'all turn that off and just tell us kind of what you want us to say? And they're like,
yeah.
What, man? And we gave delivered two of the best promos we had ever done real quick. Boom. They were fucking blown away, man. You can't have,
that's awesome,
like you said, a UCL, no offense to him, but a graduate student and all that shit, law guy, cannot write for me. I'm sorry. Especially if you don't know my background.
Exactly. Yeah.
You got to be you.
And that guy probably seen more Ascension matches than Road Warriors, you know, so.
Yeah. I learned there throughout my time. It was, it prepared me for life as well, you know, just being in the NXT system, but, you know, not just talent or anything, but, you know, you believe in yourself and, you know, just stick to your guns. I mean, this is a small thing, but I remember, like, I had been around for a little bit and, you know, raises were coming up, and then, like, you know, I asked, you know, I was so terrified. But I remember, like, going to the office and said, hey, Coach Bloom, is there any chance of that raise that you talked with me about? You know, I was like a little kid, like, so nervous. He's oh, shoot, yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, I was so terrified. It was such a big deal to me that I'm going to go in this office and talk about money with this, you know, giant 7-foot man. But like, you know what I mean? I think wrestlers were very confident when the red light's on, and then we can kind of be guilty of being insecure. I don't want to say insecure, but, you know, having self-confidence. But exactly. Yeah. We second guess ourselves a lot. We're our own worst critics.
Absolutely, man. Hey, we appreciate you coming on, Drake, man. Do you got anything you want to plug anywhere, merchandise, anywhere?
Yeah.
I know you ain't going to be wrestling for a while.
I ain't going to. I'll make an announcement about that here very, very soon. Okay. But as far as where to get shirts and everything, we'll go to, if you go to thexpwwrestling.com, you can get my t-shirts, and I get a very healthy cut of those. And you know, I appreciate any merch that folks can buy here while I'm on the show. Yeah. If you message me on Facebook, I got 8x10s out the wazoo. I learned that from you and Jamie. Have different 8x10s every few months. I got 8x10s that I'm selling. And then, if you go to prowrestlingtees.com, I got some shirts on there as well. So, you know, just support, you know, good independent wrestling. It's an exciting time to be a fan. There's so much wrestling to consume. Yeah, man, it's a great time, and I appreciate the support of, you know, I've been in this business. I've been fortunate enough, you know, 21 years now. I started off when I was, you know, 17 years old in the Evansville Coliseum. So I'm a very blessed man. And I'm very grateful. And me personally, I just want to pay it forward to the next generation.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. Man. Cool.
Yeah.
But again, thank you for coming on, man. And we wish you the best with your back and stuff like that, and just everything in general. And we all need help through that sometimes. So we're going to let Jimmy are going to come back in just a moment with Ask Wolfie D Anything.
DJ. Hey, real quick, Wolfie, before you go, I want to say, you know, while I have you on the air and your listeners are on here, you know, what you've been really good to, you know, to your time on the indies after TNA and everything, because any show that I was on with you, I wasn't a whole lot, but whether it was, you know, 30 people there or 300, like you were always super cool and welcoming to all the young guys. And, you know, I thought that was really awesome, because, you know, you didn't have to be. And so, you know, just seeing little stuff like that, now that I'm in that position where there's younger guys kind of looking up to me, I just, you know, remember that. So I appreciate that, man. You've always led by example.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, man. That means a lot.
Yeah. All right, take care, guys. God bless.
Okay, thank you, Drake. Thank you. Hit the music. All right, we are back with a little bit of that Ask Wolfie D Anything. What's that?
He said a little bit of it.
A little bit of that. Yeah. Anyway, trying to add a little flair to the show. You know how it is.
You're trying to be fly for a white guy.
Yeah, I am fly for a white guy, by the way. Ask anybody. But here's how it goes. We got a little Ask Wolfie D Anything, but first of all, I definitely loved having Drake on the show. I thought that was a great interview. Very eye-opening and very, you know, his perspective is absolutely valid and interesting. And I mean, I got to say, his line, and I don't know that it was necessarily directed at you, but I kind of feel like his line about when you were like, when is the light tubes going to hurt the fans? And he was like, well, is the blades and the cocaine going to hurt the fans? You know, and it's, I don't know that it was directed at you, but
I don't think it was. No. I don't know. Never mind.
Right. Right. Yeah, that was funny, though. Anyway, so good show. And we got a little few questions here we'll have a little fun with. So the first one today is listener Ben Martin. Ben is our kind of he's one of my friends of the intelligentsia, if that makes any sense. He's the guy. He's one of my historian buddies. Let's just say that. It's Latin for intelligence, I think.
Say it again.
Intelligentsia.
Okay.
Yeah. I might be making it up.
Jimmy across the fucking ocean there talk. Jesus. Were you making that up?
I don't think so. I've heard the word before. Okay. So anyway, what whatever. I'm saying is,
anybody knows if that's a real word, please write in and let us know.
Yeah, write in and confirm that intelligentsia is a word. I mean, I don't have time to look this up.
Intelligentsia.
Right now. Intelligentsia. Anyway, so
Ben Intelligente. Now I know Spanish.
Well, okay. Well, maybe I'm messing that up. Anyway, un auto bus.
Un auto. I was correct. So whatever.
All right. So, like I said, he's one of the intelligentsia of the podcasting buddies of mine. And so Ben Martin on Facebook, and he says, what territories would have been a good fit for Slash? He thinks Memphis, of course, but also maybe championship wrestling from Florida with Sullivan and Continental for the Fullers. Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely be good. I mean, I think, quite frankly, not to like toot my horn or something, but I could probably make it work anywhere they put me. As a wrestler, that's your job. Do what they want you to do wherever they want you to do it, you know?
Totally.
Your ability. So,
yeah.
I think I'd fit in. I mean, for sure, Memphis. We know, man, I wish I could have been at my peak, you know, around 30. 35 years old, or 30, let's say 30, and doing Slash and looking like I look now, God, that would be awesome. But I mean, you know, the way I look now, as far as like, I'm not in the greatest shape that I've ever been in right this second, but I mean, you know, Slash shape, and you know, just, I think it would be really awesome. That would have been cool. Big fucking angle with Lawler.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Can you say working angles with Lawler? That's all I'm saying, you know. But and I mean, in that regard, you know, I love that championship wrestling from Florida, working with Sullivan. Dude, you would have been a great member of his clique.
I would have been a partner. Think about if we're taking Slash back to those days, think of Slash and the Missing Link together.
Oh my God.
Slash and Tejo Khan.
Yeah.
You know, there's some other ones that's just two off the top of my head, but
yeah, that would have been incredible.
The Missing Link being the Brian Lee of the New Church, you know what I'm saying?
Me totally. Yeah.
James Mitchell, what? I just came up with a fucking really cool idea there. Too bad it can't happen. Too
bad. In another world, it's happening as we speak. Yeah. But so let's just say this. I can also see you in Paul Jones' army at Crockett, you know, working with the Koloffs and the Powers of Pain, you know. And you know,
I think in those days, man, now Slash is only 6'1". Them motherfuckers are big boys. I don't know if they'd have thrown me in that mess.
Well, Ted, they put Tejo in. How big was Tejo?
I don't have any idea. I never met the guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Interesting, dude.
There's your answer, Ben, is that me, Jim Mitchell, and the Missing Link would be cool in territories. I think that's what we take away from all that.
I love it. I think that's the gimmick. Yes, let's do it. All right. Well, sounds good. All right. Well, Ben actually has another question that, again, you know, the intelligent, you know what I mean. So his next question is, he wants to know the difference in wrestling in tennis shoes and wrestling boots.
It's definitely different. I think wrestling in tennis shoes is easier. I always liked boots that, you know, came up pretty high when I wore them. I like the high boots. I hate the way the short boots look, even. Ugh. I'm curious. I can't stand that. I think it looks ridiculous, man.
Like you're talking about, like, Goldberg boots or something?
Yeah, man. That type of shit. I mean, I guess it fits him, but I don't know. I just don't like the way they look. But then again, I couldn't see Goldberg out there in Sid Vicious boots either. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, let me ask you this, because I feel like if I were been a wrestler, knowing and reading enough about these wrestlers that I've loved, I think I would have gone with like a Sting or a Road Warrior boot where it was like pull on and.
Oh, man, I don't see how you do that. I'll tell you why. Because it's not stable.
Sure.
I feel like it wouldn't be. I've never tried it, but I feel like it would. Stable on your foot, but then again, if you're somebody like the Road Warriors, you don't necessarily you're not flying around a whole lot and moving real quick. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, the reason I'm saying this is recently Gene Jackson from the GPTV Podcast Network posted an image of a wrestler who you may actually know him in real life. His name, I think it came out as being Ray Lee or somebody like that. Anyway,
he was wearing that. Is that up around Ohio or something?
Maybe so. I'm not 100% positive. Okay. But anyway, he put an image out and the guy looked kind of little disheveled. No disrespect to the guy. he was wearing some Canadian tights. And the only thing that I thought was kind of lame about the whole image, I mean, he had a gut, but I've got a gut. You know, his hair was messed up. I don't even have hair. So what can I say to that? But he was wearing boots, and it looked like he just did not even care about tying up his boots properly. They looked like they were tied together and like some loops were missing, and it just looked kind of, it made him look sloppy to me. Right. And you know, some guys were saying the whole picture was sloppy, but in that image, the guy's boots were sloppy. So to me,
oh, the way he laced them, I know what you're talking about now, right? He missed like every other lace or something like that.
Yeah. And it looked like it was
just... Well, let me tell you, man, putting on boots, that's one of the worst things you could ask a person to do is sit down and put on a pair of boots. Now, especially, and I've been there and I'm there, you know, the old stomach, man, leaning over for that long, man, you run out of air. You got to come up like you're in a swimming pool or some shit. You duck back down and go at it again.
Yeah.
I feel them on that because, like, the Slash boots that I had... they had that Velcro thing over the front, right? The boots are black, but then over the front of it, you Velcro it to each side, like a little armored thing or whatever.
Yeah.
So underneath that, I didn't lace my boots 100% either.
Yeah.
Just a pack of ass. Right. But I had to cover it up. Now, if that were showing, obviously I wouldn't have done that. But sometimes I would do that. Not all the way, like just the last, you know, little four of the top there, you know?
Yeah. And again, don't take any offense, guy, we're talking about here. The point of the matter is I definitely understand where you're coming from, because tying up a pair of high tops for me, and I'm like, God, I got to get some air. But so I get it. And then some people say, like, you spend like so many years of your life tying up your wrestling boots and stuff. But so that would be my theory on it. Now, I'm sure they've got modifications now that you can do all kinds of things with boots. But just, I guess, tell me this. So did you train in tennis shoes and then worked in boots, right? So like immediately, did you work in boots, or what did Airwolf wear?
I did work in boots. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So you wore boots and then you went to tennis shoes with PG-13.
Right.
And now give me this. Did you have a pair of street shoes that you would wear around, or did you wear your wrestling shoes all the time?
Oh, man, no telling back then. I'm pretty sure, though. Like, especially once we got to Memphis and stuff, I had a wrestling pair. I had a few wrestling pairs.
Yeah, okay.
Shorts and shit.
Okay.
So, yeah, but the difference was, I tell you this turns into a Tracy Smothers story. It was like one of the first time, I think it was the first time I met him, in Shelbyville, comes into play again. And I was wearing tennis shoes at that point. Doing Wolfie D, and I was climbing up. I would get on the top rope, and you could reach the rafters from the top rope, you know, and I'd climb up in them and drop elbows on people and shit. And I don't remember what I did. I had my ankle sprained. I don't remember if it was from that or maybe a week before or something like that. I think it was from a week before or something. At any rate, I went up, I had the sprained ankle, and I did the thing anyway, again, you know, jumped out of the rafters. And then I get back in and Tracy's going crazy. He's like, hey, kid, no, man, this kid's jumping out of the rafters, man. He's got a sprained ankle here. He's digging through his bag, like throwing stuff out. You know what I mean?
Just, yeah.
Leaned over, just throwing back. And he digs around. He comes up with this tie-up ankle brace. He's like, here, man, here. Keep it. Put that on, man. You're killing me. Put that on. Jumping up rafters, a sprained ankle. Put that on.
God, man. You're crazy. I love that guy. Man, he was so good.
I think that's what made him, like, really take to me and like me. But, of course, Tracy liked everybody. But I spent a lot of time with Tracy, you know what I mean? A lot of miles. So, anyway, there's the answer on that one.
Yeah, man. What a great guy. Just, golly, the world misses him for sure. So, well, that was a good answer. And I think that definitely drew the comparison of boots and shoes and definitely a good one. Thanks, Ben, for those two questions. And
pants,
I won't.
And pants and boots and pants. Ain't that what it is?
Boots and shoes and all that. Anyway, so the next one and final one of the day is, this is an interesting one, and maybe you don't want to name them, but I think you wouldn't care. So this is John Mark Saw, and he is Saw John on Twitter, and he asked the question of, who was the most careless wrestler you ever worked or came across?
Ooh, let's think here.
careless, like on purpose, I guess is what they mean by that, right?
Yeah. I would say maybe, you know, somebody who just was like very sloppy.
Yeah. Okay. So the careless, and I'll address this maybe in a couple ways. Who knows where my brain will go, but so careless to me seems like they're doing it on purpose. So,
sure.
Somebody that just didn't give a shit whether they hurt you or not. So I think y'all have always heard me say that, you know, Perry Saturn was very rough. Now, I'm not going to call him careless, but in a way, when we wrestled them in Memphis, he was not the same Perry Saturn that we wrestled in ECW and I wrestled in TNA, okay? He had just come back from Japan. They thought they had to literally beat the shit out of people. And, you know, it was a little bit careless. I'll give it that. I mean, he clotheslines in the jaw, in the neck. I mean, it's just shit. Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Not hitting. Yeah. Wow.
People, more people that are like, they're just not good. And they're like big and strong, like Jeff Gaylord, God rest his soul. That son of a bitch was big, strong, but man, he was uncoordinated. I told you he hit me in the jaw so hard one time that knocked it to the probably about a quarter inch to the side. I couldn't chew. It hurt to chew. And finally, it just went back into place some kind of way. But like, just located my fucking jaw, man.
My shit, God. Like,
that's not cool, man.
No, dude, that is not cool at all.
Like, that was not a, you know, some kind of big, huge spot where I took something, him flying off the top rope and carelessly gives me the elbow shiver into the jaw. No, it was, hey, back me up, turn the corner, man. I'll turn you around. Boom. Give me one back. I put one knee. Bam. Oh, God. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. That simple. Dear God, man. Because, I mean, I would assume that those guys are not looked upon very favorably when they're that careless, right? Because, I mean,
Well, I mean, everybody loved Jeff. You just knew when you went in there, you kind of had to protect yourself.
Same. Sure.
You know, I was always taught that to protect yourself, you know, and protect your opponent.
What I meant was like, you're going to the ring and you're like, fucking, hey, I got to work this guy, man. Like, you know,
it's going to be your best match.
Right.
Just hope you can make the best of it. That's what you go out there thinking.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, because honestly, anybody who's sloppy on purpose, careless on purpose, they get got pretty soon and they don't make it, right? Like, they don't ever stick around. There's nobody that gets trained and goes through training and then gets to the ring, buys their gear, all that, just to freaking hurt somebody. Yeah. I can't imagine that.
New Jack. But hey, going back to what we were saying, if you're good enough to go out there, you know, I said some of these guys, you just hope for the best, you know, do the best you can. But there's really a prideful feeling, and for me anyway, when I knew I had to work with somebody that wasn't to my level, I felt like, okay, I'm going to get the best I can out of this dude to get him either there or, you know, right there or with me.
Yeah.
And you have a good match with somebody that everybody knows ain't that fucking good, and that just makes you look all the more better, you know?
Yeah, I imagine so, you know?
I pulled some fucking matches out of the hat, bro, I promise you.
Tell me one.
Man, I don't want to say people's names, though.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, just make up a name and say, hey, this guy, you know.
Well, this dude wasn't, and he was a friend of mine, but he just wasn't that good, man, and it was a big kind of local deal match, and man, I don't know. I don't know how to explain it, but I got the best out of him that I could. I mean, I don't think a fan could see it, but if you're a wrestler, you're going, damn, he is Weekend at Bernie's, this motherfucker walking him around and making faces and that shit. But it looked like that's what I was doing.
Yeah, that's great. You gotta tell me that name all
day. You know, like I think almost every match I had, I would think of, for instance, the heat spot, whatever, if I was a babyface, and I'd try to think of something like, hey, for you to start your heat, let's do something like this, where it's like a, not just, you know, pull the foot or, you know, just a move out of nowhere or something like that. Let's make it mean something. And I would think of like, what's the biggest bump I can take tonight? You know?
Yeah.
for Shane Williams, my friend Shane Williams, King Shane, you know, at Saw, he drop kicked me. We did something. He drop kicks me off the apron into that cage that was right on that back wall.
Yeah.
And I think I color for it. I don't remember, but you know, make it a moment for the Heat. That's how I can make him look really good. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. And you're not saying Shane is one of these guys, right?
No. I'm saying Shane. Your mentality of going out there and just trying to make your opponent look good and not just yourself.
Yeah, I saw those matches live and in color for sure. They were good matches. I watched them all. So,
and I'll say, I didn't really want to work that night. And nice guy. We had never met each other. And he said his shoulder was hurt. And I felt like he was going to phone it in that night. And I talked to him and, you know, and then I think when he got out there, that was the night I had my entrance music played by that band.
And the live band. It was awesome.
He saw the response from the, you know, small but fucking crazy rowdy crowd of what, 150, 200 people maybe?
Stuffed on top of each other.
It was really cool for that match. And I think once he felt that when he got out there, because I just think he didn't know me, you know?
Right.
He didn't know anything about me. So, and it was, you know, he was NWA champion and this match was built up. So, I don't know. We had a great match, though.
And y'all, if you can imagine, Saw was this building at the end of a strip mall, kind of. And it was like there was a gas station convenience store and then there was Saw. And if you can imagine, you could probably, run wall to wall in like a couple seconds. I mean, it wasn't. But when they had, you know, but the crazy thing is it's also in Millersville, which is going extreme, like past Madison, Tennessee. You're going up the road there, and basically people would come and fill this joint up, and especially when you had guys like Wolfie D there, and you had some of the bigger names coming in. But dude, it was packed in there, and it was the way that it was set up was two walls had seating on them, but then there were bleachers, and then it was well done. And I missed that place.
If anybody cares to accept the challenge, if you watch Cahagas and myself, and I forget how it's labeled on YouTube, it might call me like an assassin, or it might call me Wolfie D. I don't remember, but it's Cahagas and me. So if you can catch me getting color, I was going to say I'd give you some money, but I don't have any. But I would. I can't catch me. I know when I did it, but it's very, very, what's his name? Chris Angel. I'm very Chris Angel. It was magic.
Yeah. That's impressive. Yeah, I like it. Well, hey, I think there's, you know, no better way to end the show today than that question. So thank you, John Mark Saul from Twitter, and definitely appreciate, he's a new Twitter subscriber, so we definitely appreciate that. One more thing, y'all, go like the YouTube. It's grown a little bit. Definitely appreciate those, you know.
Yeah, man, get 50 YouTube out there, y'all.
Yeah, we've added about 60 subscribers, and again, that's good, but we want more, so keep it up, y'all, you know.
Twitter, I mean, we need some more on Twitter.
Yeah, we definitely need more on Twitter. We definitely need everybody more on Instagram, Twitter, too.
Hit us up on there, please.
Yeah, yeah.
We need the numbers.
Yeah. Anyway, well, go ahead.
There, guys, you're doing great listening to us, but we need numbers.
Yes, we do. It helps
keep
us.
Keep us in business or before Wolfie burns out.
Yes, y'all help me with that too. All right. Well, wrap us up, brother. We're done for the day.
All right. We're going to take it to the house.
Yes.
Live and in color with Wolfie D. This is the meal ticket for Jimmy Street. We'll see you guys next week.
When's that coming?
And now a word from our sponsor.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Give Me Back My Pro Wrestling, the podcast that's based on the old school but can still help you find the good stuff from today. Jimmy Street and the Plastic Sheik, Jared, are the undisputed tag team champions of the wrestling podcast world. From thought-provoking topics to superstar interviews to action figure expertise, this team does it all. And all they ask is, give me back my pro wrestling! every other Thursday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's right. It's the talk of Middle Tennessee, the channel you love to hate and the channel you hate to love. It's Brian Turner from Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. And if you're looking for matches from Wolfie D to Jerry Lawler to Dusty Rhodes and the team that put a pimp before your eyes and a goatee between your thighs, Boudicca and Athena, go to LostWrestling.com. See, I made it easy for you. Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. Booyah.
Woo, mercy, this is Handsome Jimmy, professional wrestler, the Booger Wooger Man. Tell my people, my brothers and sisters, don't you dare miss this one. It's Wrestling Talk with Mayor McCall. Yes, baby, be there or be square. Oh, yeah, ha, 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 ha.
Hey everyone, this is Shane from Insane Shane's World. I release wrestling figures of enhancement talent, mid-card wrestlers, and wrestlers that you never thought would have a figure available. So if you are interested in adding a really cool and rare figure to your collection, then don't hesitate to contact me at shamtheman73@gmail.com. That's shamtheman73@gmail.com. You can also join my Facebook group. Just search Insane Shane's World.
If you're a fan of rock music, I'd really appreciate it if you took a moment to check out my podcast. It's called the Decibel Geek Podcast. We've been doing it for about 10 years now. We talk about Kiss. We talk about Ozzy. We talk about Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and Metallica. We talk about all the legends from the 60s and on, up to brand new bands that you should be hearing about today that you're not going to hear on the radio. It's Decibel Geek. Wherever you find your podcasts, you'll find us there. If you love rock and roll, I can almost guarantee you're going to love my show.
So that was another great episode. Hey, Wolfie, tell them where they can find you on social media.
Jimmy, they can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. I'm just kidding. They can find me on Facebook. My personal page is Warren Wolf, W-O-L-F-E. I'm on Instagram, at WarrenWolf13.
You can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, at LiveWolfieD. Here's the thing. Wolfie always has offers for his autographed photos. He has a selection of some awesome photos from throughout his career that he will autograph and personalize any way that you want him to. Just contact him either directly at his personal Facebook page or through any one of our other pages, and we'll make sure you get in contact directly with Wolfie. Get those photos, right, Wolfie?
Yeah, I've got some good stuff on there, you know, to help with the podcast.
Folks, if you can't get out to a show to meet Wolfie D, there's nothing like that, especially for the fans of PG-13 and Wolfie D. And before we go, you can always find me, your host, Jimmy Street, at James Rock Street on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
And hey, Jimmy, before we go real quick, I just want to add in there, from the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate, first of all, the work you've done for this podcast. You have worked your butt off. Secondly, the people that are liking the page. Beyond that, even more, is the people that are listening. And we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and remember, guys, the podcast drops a new episode every Monday at noon, and our past episodes are streaming now on demand on all major podcast formats. Thanks again.
I got a cat for your dome.
He got a cat for your dome.
I got a cat for your dome.
He got a cat for your dome.
He
got a cat for your dome.
And here we go. The original white boy that came out sagging, not bragging. Don't be hating, cause I'm spitting the truth. Still livin' in color. From Rush, your mother. Utilize a hubcap unlike any other. Back in the day, I was N.O.D. and I was P to the G plus the 1 and the 3. In case you forgot, they call me Wolfie D. Been cloned and copied so many times. Tired of suckers taking credit for what is mine. You know who you are without me name dropping. Wrestling's first white boy coming out hip hop. Been doing it like this since 92. Laid low for a while and you thought I was through. Listen real close to these rhymes that I've injected. This shit's so sick it makes
makes your ears get infected. Mad skills, no faking, there is no one great. Cause I'm bringing more folks from Obi-Wan or Vader. Not here to play games, so you better beware. You don't like me, so what?
I really don't care.
Like time I keep ticking and I can't be stopped. You suck a step to the side unless you wanna get dropped. When I finish, I'll straight knock you out. Please allow me to tell you what it's all about. I'm gonna wind it up, then I'm driving it home. It's Wolfie D, baby. Huh. I got a cap for your dome.
I got a cap for your dome. We got a cap for your dome. We got a cap for your dome.
This has been a James Rock Street production.